KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, featuring stories of people of the valley, produced by media communications and journalism students at Fresno State, 90.7 KFSR.
Hello and thank you for tuning into Fresno State Focus Radio Edition. I'm Ronnie Gerber, and today on our show, we're going to talk about access versus ownership in the streaming world today.
I'm Angelica Hernandez. We'll also talk with women who use the hashtag #WhyIDidn'tReport.
And I'm Monet Schlotterbeck. Just a few days after Halloween and Day of the Dead, it's the perfect time to check out some real haunted houses.
We begin with the Brett Kavanaugh backlash. The Kavanaugh hearing stirred up a lot of conversation over the past month. The question of why someone wouldn't report a sexual assault has been making the rounds on social media, with tens of thousands of women answering. I talked with some local women who have used the hashtag #WhyIDidn'tReport, and here's what they had to say.
On this vote, the ayes are 50, the nays are 48. The nomination of Brett M. Kavanaugh of Maryland to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States is confirmed.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh was sworn into office earlier this month. But for Kavanaugh, the road to a lifetime appointment on the highest court of the land was more difficult than expected.
I am here today not because I want to be. I am terrified. I am here because I believe it is my civic duty to tell you what happened to me while Brett Kavanaugh and I were in high school.
Proceedings were derailed by allegations of sexual assault by Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. Ford's testimony ignited a political firestorm.
This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit.
The televised hearings captured the attention of a nation. According to Nielsen data, roughly 20.4 million people tuned in to watch. And those numbers don't account for the millions more who streamed the hearings live. Fresno legal assistant Cassandra Rivera was watching.
I was at work, really. We would watch it on and off online. Snapchat even had it live and everything, so we'd switch between like our phones or the computer while also trying to get work done.
President Trump published a tweet shortly after the testimonies. In it, he questioned why Ford didn't report the assault when it happened. This triggered a wave of personal stories trending on social media under the hashtag #WhyIDidn'tReport. Rivera used the hashtag to share her story.
I was very young, and it was not just by like one person, and there was people that were supposed to be very close to me. Someone that was supposed to be like a grandpa figure, and then someone that was the man that helped to baptize me when I was younger too. With like my tweet, when I brought it up to someone, their response to me was, you know, well, maybe he was drunk, like if that was an okay excuse for it. And so then I just never really brought it up to anyone again.
The excuse of being drunk. Rivera says this comment was all it took to prevent her from telling anyone about the abuse for several years.
When you're younger, you kind of don't really always feel heard. Years later, I blocked it out for a lot of my childhood. After it stopped, it was thankfully not, you know, always like continuous. But then when it all kind of just like came rushing back when I was a teen in high school.
It affected her emotionally and physically.
A lot of the times people don't understand that self-harm is more of a just physical release that you can't get emotionally. I finally opened up to my mom about it. It's still always hard.
The fact that she talked about it later is not unusual, right?
Dr. Catherine Forbes is a women's studies professor at Fresno State.
It's the survivor's experience. The survivor gets to make a choice about how it gets used, if he or she wants to come forward with it.
Forbes knows firsthand, 3 months before she met her husband, another man sexually assaulted her.
I remember the man's face. I remember I was at a party with him. He was part of this white elite group as well. He was in a fraternity. I'm 51. I told my husband about it last week for the first time. So it's not unusual. It's not unusual. And I'm a women's studies professor. I'm a feminist, and I teach about assault, and I did the same thing.
Forbes says survivors often weigh the cost and benefits of reporting, and this can be especially difficult when the assault occurs at a young age.
You see, there's a multitude of reasons, but there are certainly some patterns. One of the things that's really important to teenagers are relationships with their peers. And the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of sexual assaults is perpetrated by somebody you know. So reporting means disrupting that relationship. It's a shameful experience, right? It's embarrassing. If you're a teenager, you have to tell your parents. You have to tell your parents that you were drinking. You have to tell your parents, you know, all kinds of things that may be related.
And speaking out doesn't always mean being heard.
What we see in the hearings is that women's testimony doesn't get counted as evidence.
To many survivors, Kavanaugh's confirmation was a wake-up call, shedding light on the way sexual assault cases are handled, not just in a public and highly politicized setting, but on a personal level as well.
I feel that it helps keep that defense strong of the, well, boys will be boys. It shows them that they can do what they want and still get away with it. Like, they won't necessarily be held accountable for it.
Now, the flip side to any political movement is that there's always the chance for a counter movement.
Dr. Wes Wise teaches mass communication and public relations at Fresno State. Wise says he doubts that Ford's testimony was ever a threat to Kavanaugh's confirmation.
I think that their minds were already made up prior to the testimony. And I think it was designed in a way to gauge public opinion or affect public opinion.
There is plenty of public opinion. The hashtag Why I Didn't Report reached millions of people on all social media platforms. And Why says hashtags can make a difference.
Any political movement large enough to affect how millions of people may decide on an issue, especially at the ballot box, can definitely affect change.
There are signs that the Why I Didn't Report hashtag has influenced local change. In the 4 days between Ford's testimony and Kavanaugh's confirmation, RAIN, an anti-sexual violence organization, reported a 338% increase in the number of calls coming into their national sexual assault hotline. While these signs are promising, Wise says the true test comes when the cameras are turned off.
The problem is these kinds of movements can generate a lot of interest in a very short period of time, but they're difficult to maintain because you're talking about a lot of emotional energy, and that is really hard to keep that level of emotional energy.
Wise says learning to choose your battles and taking care of yourself and those around you is the key to maintaining a movement's power.
So when I say pick and choose your battles, what I mean is not that some issues are inherently more important than others, but fight in a way that's going to allow you to stay in that fight in the long term. Because it is easy to burn yourself out.
Rivera says sometimes change starts with a simple tweet.
I feel like when you speak up about it and other people around you realize that it happened to someone close to them, then it kind of makes them understand more maybe, and then just kind of like brings to light to them a little more that it's a serious issue and it's a lot more common than they would imagine.
Whatever stories they tell or experiences they share, for survivors, the fight has just begun.
Keep fighting because you will be strong, and all you can do is keep moving forward and keep pushing.
That was Cassandra Rivera, a legal assistant in Fresno. She definitely expressed similar sentiments to other people who've spoken about this issue, that they're disappointed, but they're definitely hopeful, which I thought was really interesting.
Most of us have the perception that streets around Fresno State are dangerous. Allie Harrell talked with Fresno State Police about what students can do to stay safe.
Many women recognize this sound. It is the sound of pepper spray on a keychain.
My mom wanted me to carry pepper spray, but my dad was like, no, like she doesn't need it and stuff like that. So it was kind of like back and forth for them. And my dad made me put in my contacts the Fresno State Police Department.
Yadira Arredondo, a Fresno State alumna, recalls the safety precautions given to her from her parents her freshman year back in the fall of 2014.
He made me put that on my speed dial, and like he was always just like, well, make sure, you know, like when you're walking, because I had a lot of night classes my freshman year because I had a crappy schedule, and like they were always terrified. They were like, text me the second you get out of class, and then like the second you get into your car, and like lock all your doors. I think my parents really did like try to make sure that I was safe. I think they made me like aware at school, especially when I thought school was supposed to be a safe place, but like in general I feel like, especially in college, because I would be by myself, they definitely opened my eyes in that sense.
Amy Luna, the public information officer for the Fresno State Police Department, sees nothing wrong with bringing pepper spray to campus in order to feel more safe.
If you have pepper spray in your hand and you're looking at it, you're thinking about your safety, right? That's a little reminder that's like, oh, I need to be paying attention. I have a tool if I needed to defend myself, and you're kind of making that plan. So I think that in that aspect that those are good things because it's making you think about your safety. But if you do choose to use any of those things, just make sure that it's within what the law allows.
It is important for students to point out when they see something out of place during their usual walk to class.
The biggest thing that you'll hear from any law enforcement agency is stay aware of your surroundings. And that just kind of helps you scan ahead and be able to plan and make decisions accordingly. And the second thing that is really important for our department is if you see something, say something. That allows us to continue to be proactive in the way that we patrol the campus community. So just being aware of your surroundings, and then if you see something, say something. Don't be afraid to ask questions and talk. And whether it's you call the department, you flag down one of our staff, you know, as they're patrolling the campus, or you do an online contact form, whatever it be, don't be afraid to reach out to us. We are a resource, and we're very invested in our community here, and we want you to be able to feel comfortable coming to us.
But not all dangers are physical. The campus police can also help you when it comes to reporting things like harassment.
So I feel like even in like shows or movies and stuff, men are kind of portrayed as like to keep trying when they really want somebody. But at the same time, it's like that could backfire because like in other people's senses, just like no means no. Even like in person, like they're still like, they'll follow you around or like they'll still be texting you like, oh, hey, what's up? Like, how's it going? And you're just like, can you stop? Like, even if you're not messaging them back, they'll still blow up your phone like, hey, what are you doing? I don't understand like how you not get a hint. Like, that's also scary too because that could lead to like being obsessive.
The most important thing when it comes to harassment, that's always the first step, that the first thing the officer will say to you is just ignoring them isn't enough. You have to say, stop, you're harassing me. If you continue to do this, I will report you to the police, because a lot of times the person who's pushing doesn't realize they're crossing the line. And so once you set that line, it makes a difference. And if it doesn't make a difference, the police have tools to be able to address that with the law and help you stop that.
There are also programs on campus to help you if you need help gaining the confidence to draw the line. RAD teaches women how to draw the line by speaking up and standing up for themselves.
RAD is a self-defense class for men and women. It's based on kind of teaching individuals basic self-awareness and then basic self-defense techniques. They try to incorporate real life scenarios, like situations you could potentially be in if someone were to grab your arm, grab you from behind, or be on top of you, that sort of thing, and then how to break away from those situations. And so through that, it just builds your confidence in knowing that even if someone's larger than you, or if someone grabs you unexpectedly, that through that class, you've gained the tools to be able to get away and protect yourself.
According to RAN's website, RANN.org, among undergraduate students, 23.1% of females and 5.4% of males experience rape or sexual assault through physical force, violence, or incapacitation. 4.2% of students have also experienced stalking since entering college.
I think, especially with women, we're taught to be polite, right? We're taught not to raise our voice, that that's not how you speak to other people, that you talk respectfully. And when someone is, you know, in your personal space or harassing you, it's important that you stand up for yourself and you voice that line and say, you need to stop. So one thing that I thought was really good in our RAD program that we teach is they make you yell in that class. They make you yell, stop. Stop, leave me alone. And the instructors will work with you. And if you're not saying it loud enough or with enough authority, they're like, no, say it again. And so you kind of have to have that practice. And so find ways with your friends, say like, okay, if something were to happen, what is our plan? It's always good to have someone looking out for you, you looking out for another person, and then practice those things. Because if something does happen where you do need to use those tools, you'll be a lot more confident.
Knowing these statistics and what we discussed today, I think it's important for students to look for resources on campus to learn about different ways they can defend themselves. This was Alexandra Harrell with Fresno State KFSR.
Everyone loves a good story. Today, people love discovering a new TV show or movie to get lost in. Today, services like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Instant Video allow people to instantly summon their favorite content, essentially on demand. Popcorn is optional. Silencing cell phones is not mandatory. And the only real requirement is having access to a stable internet connection.
In this episode, we take a look into the ways in which today's audience views the things that they view. Skylar Munkers is a media communications and journalism student at Fresno State. Munkers loves the creative process, the artistic process of filmmaking, and anything that goes along with it. I was fortunate to have the opportunity to take some time and discuss with him how he views media consumption in this digital age of streaming.
So what I think about like Hulu and Netflix as a service, I think it has broadened my ability to try new things. I love to get new movies and buy them because before that's all you could do. And when you have to buy something, you don't get that level of, well, I can try this, because you might fail and be pissed you wasted whatever amount of money. When you're paying for a service, you're paying for the ability to access movies at any moment or any show at any moment, at any time, anywhere you want it. I love Star Wars. So when that comes out in theater, I will go see it in theater because that's how much I love. I love the experience of the film. If there's a movie I think looks really good, but I'm not quite sure, I'll wait till it goes on a streaming service and watch it there. Watch it, and if I love it, then I'll go buy it.
Aaron Schulke is a media communications and journalism professor at Fresno State. He also happens to be a filmmaker himself. As a filmmaker and a teacher, I thought it was interesting to pick his brain and get his view on what he thinks in regards to the way people engage with content today. And also to get an inside look as to how he himself, as a consumer, chooses to engage with media.
It almost is like a weird fetish to hold a little disc in your hand. You know, it's like, oh, I need, it's like we don't have it if we can't hold it. I wonder how much of it is a strange, like, almost like 19th century or early 20th century notion of capitalism, you know, that I am acquiring goods, and part of the way that I'm recognizing that I'm getting value for the money that I'm spending is I get this thing, and here it is, here's this thing, and it's worth something of intrinsic value, except it's not.
So then, do you really even care about physical discs? Do you care about owning physical media? Does a physical media library, like, is that relevant to you anymore? How do you feel about the move towards streaming? Does convenience ultimately win out?
The vast majority of the media that I consume is streaming, which I think is just the way that most people are doing it. As a consumer, I think it's really fantastic because it's so much more reasonable and economical. You know, you have access to these vast libraries of content, all of these different things that you want. It can be a little frustrating. Space changes and moves, and like Netflix used to have every movie you wanted to watch, and now it doesn't, you know? And so it's changed into something else, and so you have to like, it does feel like we're getting increasing numbers of subscription services that we have to get all the stuff we used to be able to get from just one source. But, you know, part of that is just kind of the growing pains of coming into this new space that we really haven't totally figured out. And there's always this fear that when a new platform comes along, that it's going to destroy the revenue stream of a previous platform. So remember how television killed radio?
Except, well, it didn't.
Because it's two different things, and we actually are savvy and sophisticated enough consumers that we like to consume media in lots of different ways. And there are some films I want to go to a theater and watch. There are some things that I would rather watch at home.
Zach Holt is a recent transfer student from Fresno City College. He happens to be double majoring in media communications and journalism, as well as psychology at Fresno State. Holt is a media enthusiast, and whether he's into movies, games, or music, he's usually entrenched in some form of entertainment at any given time.
I typically don't buy or rent movies unless there's something very specific I'm looking for. For example, the last movie I rented was Stephen King's It on, I believe, Amazon Instant Video. And that was just because I wanted to show it to my girlfriend who had never seen it. Other than that, don't really use them. Sometimes I'll consume Netflix off of my phone or pretty much just Netflix as far as streaming services.
So then how do you tend to watch movies? Do you rent them? Do you stream them? Do you still buy physical discs? How does that change, or how is that different than, let's say, music? What services do you use for music? Do you use Apple Music, Spotify? What do you use? And is it different than how you choose to engage with movies?
Apple Music, yeah, is my primary music distribution platform. Sometimes I'll use YouTube as a source of music, but it's really only because I'm looking for something very obscure.
How about cinema? Do you see movie theaters being at risk at all due to the world of streaming? Or do you think that people are still going to go to the movie theater to see the things that they really want to see, the big blockbuster titles?
There's movies that they want to see, but going to the movie theaters is a lot more expensive than just staying home and watching Netflix. for a variety of reasons. And I think that also appeals to a lot of people, that they can watch it in the comfort of their own home. They just have to wait a little longer, which they're not a huge fan of something like skyscrapers, so they're willing to wait. But for something that they care about, that could obviously change the equation.
It's really situational. I think I totally see where everyone is coming from with, it depends on what it means to you. So I'm not full digital, but catching something in the middle of it, streaming or on TV, is so much more organic.
I recently started watching all the classic horror movies, starting with Army of Darkness, and then I just watched John Carpenter's Halloween, the original, in preparation for the newest film. So I'm getting really into that whole scary movie vibe right now.
The month of November begins with the Day of the Dead. It follows Halloween, making this one of the spookiest times of the year. It's a time many of us like a good scare, and a lot of us go to haunted houses to get our scare on. Cassidy Lopez wanted more than your typical haunted house scare. She wanted the real thing, and she found it at Kearney Mansion.
First, I had to find a real haunted house. I used my phone to scroll through the statuses on Facebook and came across a post by my best friend. It was captioned, Top 9 Haunted Places in Fresno, California. To be completely honest, I'm a huge scaredy cat. But for some reason, my curiosity won, and I was drawn to Kearney Mansion, number 3 on the list. My GPS gave me 3 different routes. I hit go to the first one listed.
Starting route to Kearney Mansion Museum.
And shot a text to a classmate to meet me there. Because obviously, no one should do anything scary alone. Someone has to live to tell the story. And before I knew it, I was stopped in front of the house. It looked so creepy and so dead, and abandoned, surrounded by a chain-link fence. I kept driving, and my GPS rerouted me down Chateau Avenue, and oh my gosh, the road was lined with palm trees. I took in the view as Good Life by One Republic played in the background. And then my GPS tells me to take a right in 500 feet onto Kearney Boulevard. I remember back in the article that I was reading that it was Kearney Street that a girl, or some say a witch, would be walking. That the street itself was also haunted. I keep driving and I see a sign, Kearney Mansion this way. And I turn into the park. I make my way to the mansion, and I get there, and a few minutes later, so does my friend. We get out, and we take in our surroundings. Maybe at night I can see where it could come off scary, but during the day, it's absolutely beautiful. We walk up the stairs, and the door is locked. I can see the lights are on, so I get the courage, and I peek my head through the window. And the moment I look in the window, my friend moves, and her shadow scares me, and I jump back and scream. Then I realize it was her shadow, and I start laughing. So we walk around, and it feels creepy. All the windows have this gate around them, and it's way too quiet. We keep walking around and see 2 more doors, but they are also locked. We get bummed out, but a part of me is like, yes, you get to live another day. And the other part of me wants to know what's inside. When all of a sudden, a man appears just to tell us that we have to wait until the next hour to get a tour. As it comes closer to the hour, the guy opens up the door, and we approach the mansion and walk inside. It looks different. Very different time periods are shown within the decorations of the house. And the wallpaper, well, it's not something I would ever put in my home.
So, welcome to the Kearney Mansion. My name is Eric, and I work for the Fresno Historical Society. We've been taking care of this house since 1962. In all that time, not a single one of us has seen a ghost. Yeah. If that's what you come for, you'll be a little disappointed.
So my friend and I look at each other, and we're like, great. There goes any thoughts of seeing anything scary. As we are going through the house, we come to one of the rooms, and it has about 5 porcelain dolls all over the room. Now, I have seen the horror movie Annabelle, so I'm like, okay, these dolls better not move. They don't move, and we continue on during the tour, when all of a sudden, the tour guide just stops. He starts looking around, and then there's a moment of silence. So he goes, oh, I thought I heard a knocking, and I'm like, okay, I'll let it slide this one time. As a tour comes to an end, I can say I survived. And I saw nothing, and nothing strange was out of place. So I have to conclude that I can't speak on behalf of the haunting of the Kearney Mansion. But maybe I'll take another trip there at night. Or maybe not. But till then, some hauntings will remain unknown. So I'll have to leave it up to the ghost hunters to be the judge of which hauntings are true and which are false.
And that was Cassidy Lopez reporting. So, what did you guys do for this Halloween?
I bought a bunch of candy to hand out to the kids I suspected would come to my door, and there were 0 trick-or-treaters. So now I have a bunch of candy, which is great, and I'm excited. But that's what I did. I watched scary movies all Halloween and waited for trick-or-treaters that never arrived.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know what that's about. I don't know where all the kids are.
They do trunk-or-treat now.
That's what I've heard.
Have you heard of that? Mm. It's safer, I guess. But, you know, it's still nothing beats the nostalgia of going up to someone's door.
Totally.
Absolutely. Saying trick-or-treat, so.
Yeah. I always felt super nervous, like, walking up to people's house. Like, and you just never knew. Like,
my family would go all out. So we would do crazy decorations on the front of our house. And I always liked that. So it's kind of a bummer that they just go to trunk-or-treats. Members of the Fresno State Aztec Dance Club celebrated Dia de los Muertos Thursday by placing brightly decorated altars in the free speech area of campus.
My name is Lauren Maldonado. So every year here at Fresno State, we always celebrate what is known as Dia de los Muertos, which is held the first and the second day of November. What it typically is that you're just remembering your loved ones who have passed away. So what we do is that we set up altars for them. We put pictures of them. We put their favorite food, like something that reminds you of them, something like their favorite object. Like if they liked soccer, you put like a soccer ball. Or if they like video games, you can put video games. Or just something that describes them that you remember of them.
So my name is Veronica Aguilar. I'm part of the Aztec Dance Club. I'm the advisor, but I'm also a member of the dance group as well. This one is my mom. We set her up every year just in remembrance of her. And basically the whole meaning of the celebration is to celebrate the life that they lived, not so much mourn that they're gone, but to remember them and remember the life that they lived and to keep those memories alive. This is my mom. Her name is Maria. So my little one, my little daughter, is named after my mom. And this item right here is like super special because this was her makeup box. So it's like all her makeup. And this was like her box. This was like her treasure. So she was all about her makeup. So she carried this box with her everywhere. And it's super heavy. It's not light. So, you know, she has her little perfumes in there. So this box right here, it's like, whew, like as soon as I see it, it just, you know, instantly. But they're good memories. And just bringing that and keeping that memory alive and continuing to honor her and then showing my children who she was and just remembering her in that good way. The sunflower is my favorite flower and the calla lilies are hers, so this has a lot of meaning. The marigolds, I'm not sure if you're aware of the significance of the marigolds, but the color is to attract the spirits. When they come back to Earth, they're allowed to come and visit their family these 2 days. And technically, the Dia de los Muertos season starts when the season starts changing. So it's really a lot longer than the 2 days, but the marigolds are what attract the spirits to come in the scent. And technically, you're supposed to leave a trail of the petals from their altar to wherever, you know, so that they can find their way. And that's the main goal, to educate that it's not Halloween, it's not connected to Halloween, it's a whole nother beautiful celebration that has to do with life, and it's a celebration.
So I don't know if you guys got a chance to check out the altars, but they were beautiful. They had carnations everywhere. It was gorgeous. There were sugar skulls, brightly decorated. And a lot of the altars had very personal mementos on them, so each one was decorated differently. And there was, like, food out there. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to check it out, unfortunately, but I know a lot of those celebrations are always very
vibrant. You know,
very vibrant, yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of very inspiring vibe. I think it's cool that it's a celebration of life. And that wraps up our show for the week. Next week on Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, we'll be taking a look at dating in 2018, local comedy, and movie sequels.
Fresno State Focus Radio Edition is produced by Professor Faith Sidlow for the Department of Media Communications and Journalism. Our stories and interviews are produced and edited by Ronnie Gerber and Helica Hernandez, Cassie Lopez, and Allie Harrell.
This program is produced in collaboration with 90.7 KFSR. With Ronnie Gerber and Monet Schlatterbeck, I'm Helica Hernandez. Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
Have a great morning.
KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, Saturday mornings at 5. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.